Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. And today we're diving into a case that's really going to make you think about fairness in the justice system,
Yeah,
United States v. Armstrong.
absolutely.
And it boils down to this idea of selective prosecution and how much evidence do you need to even start questioning whether bias is at play?
Right. And the thing that's important to remember here is this case doesn't revolve around the guilt or innocence of the defendants. It focuses on the potential for racial bias in influencing who gets prosecuted in the first place.
Yeah, it's not about like, did they do it or not? But were they singled out? Why were they singled out by the justice system? So let's get to the facts of the case. We're dealing with a group of black defendants, Armstrong and others, facing some pretty serious charges related to crack cocaine and firearms. And they claim that they were targeted for federal prosecution because of their race.
And they had some evidence to support this claim. They cited a study that indicated that during 1991, all 24 crack cocaine cases that were handled by the Federal Public Defender's Office involved black defendants. So that's a pretty striking statistic.
It raises some eyebrows, for sure. So naturally, they wanted to investigate further. They filed a motion for discovery, basically asking the government, hey, can you hand over information about the race of defendants in these similar drug cases? They were hoping to find a pattern that would support their claim, essentially saying, look, if race isn't a factor in your prosecution, decisions, show us the data, prove it.
Essentially.
But the government pushed back.
Yeah, they did.
They said revealing their prosecutorial strategy would compromise their ability to, do their job. So we have a classic legal showdown. What happened next? Did the government comply with the request?
Not at all. They refused, and it led to this standoff that eventually resulted in the district court dismissing the case.
Wow. So the government's argument was that disclosing this prosecutorial strategy would hinder their ability to effectively prosecute cases.
They're saying, look, we need to be able to use our discretion and we need to be able to make these judgment calls
Yeah.
without having to reveal every single thing that goes into it.
So this clash of perspectives ultimately landed this case in the Supreme Court.
The highest court in the land.
What did the highest court in the land have to say about this whole situation?
Well, the Supreme Court's majority opinion set a very high bar for proving selective prosecution. They said you need what they called clear evidence of two key things. The first is discriminatory effect, meaning are people of other races who are committing similar crimes not being prosecuted?
Okay, so essentially you need to demonstrate that the way that the law is being applied disproportionately affects one racial group compared to others. Makes sense.
That's the first thing.
What's the second thing?
The second is what they call discriminatory intent,
Okay.
meaning was the decision to prosecute these particular individuals actually motivated by racial bias? It's not enough to show that there's a racial disparity in prosecutions. You have to prove that those disparities were a result of intentional bias, not just a coincidence or some other factor.
That sounds incredibly difficult to prove.
It is. It's a really high bar.
It's like trying to read someone's mind
It's very challenging.
and determine their true motives.
And this is where this concept of similarly situated individuals comes into play. Defendants have to demonstrate that people of other races who committed similar crimes under similar circumstances were not prosecuted. In other words, they need to show that the prosecution chose to go after them because of their race,
Got it.
not because of something else.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, the Supreme Court acknowledged that, we need to balance the government's need to prosecute effectively with the potential for unfair practices based on race. But they ultimately sided with the government in this case, saying that the defendants didn't meet that high burden of proof required for selective prosecution.
The court really emphasized the importance of prosecutorial discretion. The idea that prosecutors need a certain degree of freedom to decide which cases to pursue and how to handle them. But this case really sparked this larger debate about how to ensure that that discretion isn't being used to mask discriminatory practices.
So this brings us to a very fascinating part of this case, and that is Justice Stevens's dissenting opinion, which had a very different take on this whole situation.
It did.
He didn't mince words.
Not at all. He was very forceful in his dissent.
Yeah.
Justice Stevens was deeply troubled by the harsh sentencing laws for crack cocaine offenses, right, which were far more severe than those for powder cocaine offenses.
Right. And as we know, these harsher crack cocaine penalties were disproportionately affecting black defendants.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so Stevens argued that this sentencing disparity, coupled with the overrepresentation of black defendants in these crack cocaine cases, pointed toward a systemic problem. He believed that the district judge was right to press for more information from the government, even if the defendant's initial evidence wasn't statistically perfect.
Right. He felt like the potential for injustice was so significant that it warranted a closer look.
Right.
Even if they couldn't definitively prove intentional bias.
Exactly. He felt like the district judge had a responsibility to delve deeper into this issue, especially given the severe consequences that were at stake.
So we have this really fascinating tension here.
Yeah.
Between the majority opinion, which sets this very high bar for proving selective prosecution, and then you have Justice Stevens' dissent.
Yeah.
Which is arguing for greater scrutiny, especially in cases like this that involve such stark racial disparities and harsh sentencing laws.
Yeah.
It's like two different lenses for viewing the same situation.
It highlights the complexity of this issue. You know, there's no easy answer here. And even the justices themselves have different opinions on how to balance these competing interests.
Now, before we get to the concurring opinions, which add even more nuance to this case, let's pause here and bring our listener directly into the conversation.
Okay.
What stands out to you so far about this case? What questions are swirling in your mind as we unpack these legal arguments? This case really asks us to consider how much evidence is enough to raise serious concerns about potential bias in the justice system.
Yeah, it's a crucial question and one that Stevens grappled with.
Right.
In his dissent, he believed that the potential for injustice in this case was so significant that it warranted further investigation, even if the defendants hadn't met that strict, clear evidence standard.
So walk us through Stevens' reasoning here.
Okay.
What specifically troubled him about this case?
Well, one of his major concerns was the stark contrast between federal and state prosecutions for crack offenses. You know, in many states, the penalties were less severe, and there wasn't this dramatic racial disparity in who was being prosecuted. And this raised a red flag for Stevens. You know, why were federal prosecutors, particularly in this district, choosing to focus so heavily on black defendants for crack offenses?
So it almost sounds like there might have been two separate systems of justice at play.
That's the point Stevens was trying to make.
Interesting.
And remember, the defendants had presented that initial study showing that in 1991, every single crack cocaine case handled by the Federal Public Defender's Office involved a black defendant.
Right.
Now, while that data point alone might not be enough to conclusively prove intentional bias, Stevens argued it was more than enough to warrant a deeper look.
Yeah, and the government's response to the discovery request probably didn't help their case.
Right. Yeah, they provided a list of thousands of defendants that were charged with drug offenses.
Okay.
But very few were prosecuted for crack, and the ones who were charged with crack offenses.
Right. Of those they identified, all of them were members of racial or ethnic minorities.
That's correct.
Not a single white defendant was included. So to be clear, the government couldn't provide a single example of a white person being prosecuted for a similar crack cocaine offense in this district during that time period.
That's right. And Justice Stevens really zeroed in on this point.
Yeah.
He famously stated in his dissent, "Statistics are not, of course, the whole answer, but nothing is as emphatic as zero."
Wow.
He argued that the government's inability to produce even one example of a white defendant facing similar charges was incredibly telling.
You can almost hear the gavel slam as he delivers that line.
Yeah.
It really does make you wonder, if race wasn't a factor in these prosecutorial decisions, why weren't there any white defendants in that sample?
It does seem statistically improbable, to say the least.
Yeah.
Stevens certainly thought so. He believed that this absence of white defendants, along with the other evidence presented, strongly suggested a pattern of racial disparity in who was being targeted for these crack cocaine offenses, particularly at the federal level.
This case really forces us to think about the limits of data, too.
It does.
Clearly, the lack of data on white defendants was a huge problem. But even when data is presented, it can be open to interpretation.
Yeah.
What do you think, as our expert, about the role of data in cases like this?
That's a great question. Data can be a powerful tool for revealing potential disparities and biases within the justice system. But as we've seen in this case, data alone isn't always enough. It's essential to consider the context, to look at the bigger picture, and to be willing to ask hard questions, even when the answers might be uncomfortable.
And it's also important to consider the human stories behind the data, right? These aren't just numbers we're talking about. These are real people.
Absolutely.
Whose lives are deeply affected by the decisions made within the justice system. And Justice Stevens, in his dissent, he seemed to be advocating for a more holistic view, taking into account not just the hard data, but also the broader context of racial disparities in the criminal justice system. And he felt like this context couldn't be ignored, particularly when dealing with such severe sentencing laws that were disproportionately affecting Black communities.
Yes. And this brings us back to the heart of the issue in United States v. Armstrong, the tension between prosecutorial discretion, the authority that's given to prosecutors to make these judgment calls about which cases to pursue, and the potential for bias to seep into those decisions. The majority opinion emphasized the importance of granting prosecutors leeway to do their jobs effectively. But Stevens argued that such deference should not come at the cost of ignoring potential injustices, especially when the evidence suggests that race might be a factor.
Right. It's a really difficult balance to strike because on one hand, we don't want to hamstring prosecutors and prevent them from doing their jobs.
Right.
But on the other hand, we need to ensure that prosecutorial discretion isn't being used as a shield for discriminatory practices.
Absolutely. And this case sparked a conversation about these very issues, a conversation that continues to this day. United States v. Armstrong forces us to grapple with the complexities of proving bias, even when it may be present. It highlighted the fact that sometimes the appearance of injustice can be as damaging as the injustice itself, even if we can't definitively prove discriminatory intent. The fact that these disparities exist and continue to persist should give us pause.
And it underscores the importance of ongoing vigilance and scrutiny.
Absolutely.
Particularly when it comes to prosecutorial practices and ensuring equal justice for all, regardless of race. We can't just assume that the system is operating fairly.
Right.
We need to constantly be asking questions, examining the data, and holding our institutions accountable.
I completely agree. This case serves as a reminder that the pursuit of justice is an ongoing process. It requires constant attention and a willingness to confront difficult truths about our systems and ourselves.
Now let's delve into the concurring opinions in this case.
Okay.
Because they add yet another layer of complexity to this already fascinating legal puzzle.
They do.
So we've got this stark contrast between the majority opinion and Justice Stevens's dissent, and then we have the concurring opinions. Where do they fall on this spectrum?
Well, the concurring opinions are interesting because they agreed with the majority's decision to overturn the dismissal of the case, but they had different perspectives on Rule 16, which governs discovery in criminal cases. And it's a good example of how even when justices agree on the outcome of a case, they might have different views on the underlying legal principles.
So it wasn't just like a yes or no.
Right.
Even within the agreement, there were nuances and different interpretations.
Exactly. Some of the concurring justices expressed concern about what a broad interpretation of Rule 16 could mean. They worried it could lead to defendants making these excessive and unnecessary discovery requests, potentially bogging down the legal process and making it harder for the justice system to function efficiently.
Right. So it sounds like they were trying to balance the need for fairness with the practical considerations of managing the workload of the courts.
That was their concern. Yes.
They felt that requiring prosecutors to disclose extensive information about their decision-making process in every single case could make it more difficult for them to effectively prosecute cases.
But wouldn't that also make it harder to hold prosecutors accountable for potential bias?
Well, that's the tension.
If they don't have to disclose as much information, it becomes more challenging to scrutinize their decisions.
Right. That's the tension that we keep coming back to. In this case, finding that sweet spot between protecting prosecutorial discretion and ensuring fairness and transparency, it's a delicate balancing act.
So after considering all of these different perspectives, where does that leave us? What are the key takeaways from United States v. Armstrong?
Well, United States v. Armstrong established a high bar for proving selective prosecution. It reaffirmed the broad discretion that's given to prosecutors, making it very difficult for defendants to successfully challenge charges based on claims of racial bias. They need that clear evidence of both discriminatory effect and discriminatory intent, which is a very high standard to meet. It sounds like this case made it harder to address potential racial disparities in the justice system.
That's one interpretation, but it's important to remember that the court didn't entirely shut the door on these types of claims. They acknowledged the role of the courts in ensuring that prosecutorial discretion isn't being misused for unconstitutional purposes. So the possibility of challenging potential bias is still there, but the burden of proof remains incredibly high for defendants.
This deep dive has been a real eye-opener. United States v. Armstrong is clearly a landmark case that continues to shape discussions about fairness, bias, and accountability in our justice system.
It definitely highlights that ongoing tension between prosecutorial discretion and the pursuit of equal justice for everyone, regardless of their race. It also emphasizes the crucial role of the courts in navigating these complex issues and ensuring that our legal system lives up to its ideals.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, we want to leave you with some final questions to ponder. What would you have decided if you were on the jury for this case? Do you think the defendants met that high bar of clear evidence? What does this case tell us about the challenges of proving bias, even when it might be present? We encourage you to continue exploring this fascinating and important area of law. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into United States v. Armstrong. So walk us through Stevens's reasoning here. What specifically troubled him about this case?
Well, one of his major concerns was this stark contrast between federal and state prosecutions for crack offenses. In many states, the penalties were less severe, and there wasn't this dramatic racial disparity in who is being prosecuted. And this raised a red flag for Stevens, like, why were federal prosecutors, particularly in this district, choosing to focus so heavily on black defendants for crack offenses?
It almost sounds like there might have been like two separate systems of justice at play.
That's the point Stevens was trying to make. And remember, the defendants had presented that initial study showing that in 1991, every single crack cocaine case handled by the Federal Public Defender's Office involved a black defendant. Now, while that data point alone might not be enough to conclusively prove intentional bias, Stevens argued that it was more than enough to warrant a deeper look.
And the government's response to that discovery request probably didn't help their case, right?
Right. They provided a list of thousands of defendants that were charged with drug offenses, but very few were prosecuted for crack and the ones who were charged with crack offenses.
All of them were members of racial or ethnic minorities.
That's correct.
Not a single white defendant was included.
Exactly.
So to be clear, the government couldn't provide a single example of a white person being prosecuted for a similar crack cocaine offense in this district during that time period.
That's right. And Justice Stevens really zeroed in on this point. He famously stated in his dissent, "Statistics are not, of course, the whole answer, but nothing is as emphatic as zero." He argued that the government's inability to produce even one example of a white defendant facing similar charges was incredibly telling.
You can almost hear the gavel slam as he delivers that line.
It's a very powerful statement.
It really does make you wonder if race wasn't a factor in these prosecutorial decisions. Why weren't there any white defendants in that sample?
It does seem statistically improbable, to say the least.
Yeah.
Stevens certainly thought, so he believed that this absence of white defendants, along with the other evidence presented, strongly suggested a pattern of racial disparity in who was being targeted for these crack cocaine offenses, particularly at the federal level.
This case really forces us to think about the limits of data, too.
It does.
Clearly, the lack of data on white defendants was a huge problem. But even when data is presented, it can be open to interpretation. What do you think is our expert about the role of data in cases like this?
That's a great question. Data can be a powerful tool for revealing potential disparities and biases within the justice system. But as we've seen in this case, data alone isn't always enough. It's essential to consider the context, to look at the bigger picture, and to be willing to ask hard questions, even when the answers might be uncomfortable.
And it's also important to consider the human stories behind the data. These aren't just numbers we're talking about. These are real people whose lives are deeply affected by the decisions made within the justice system. And Justice Stevens, in his dissent, he seemed to be advocating for a more holistic view, taking into account not just the hard data, but also the broader context of racial disparities in the criminal justice system. And he felt like this context couldn't be ignored, particularly when dealing with such severe sentencing laws that were disproportionately affecting black communities.
Yes, and this brings us back to the heart of the issue in United States v. Armstrong, this tension between prosecutorial discretion, the authority that's given to prosecutors to make these judgment calls about which cases to pursue and the potential for bias to seep into those decisions. The majority opinion emphasized the importance of granting prosecutors leeway to do their jobs effectively, but Stevens argued that such deference should not come at the cost of ignoring potential injustices, especially when the evidence suggests that race might be a factor.
It's a really difficult balance to strike because, on the one hand, we don't want to hamstring prosecutors and prevent them from doing their jobs. But on the other hand, we need to ensure that prosecutorial discretion isn't being used as a shield for discriminatory practices.
Absolutely. And in this case, really sparked a conversation about these very issues, a conversation that continues to this day. United States v. Armstrong forces us to grapple with the complexities of proving bias, even when it may be present. It highlighted the fact that sometimes the appearance of injustice can be as damaging as the injustice itself, even if we can't definitively prove discriminatory intent. The fact that these disparities exist and continue to persist should give us pause.
And it underscores the importance of ongoing vigilance and scrutiny, particularly when it comes to prosecutorial practices and ensuring equal justice for all. Regardless of race, we can't just assume that the system is operating fairly. We need to constantly be asking questions, examining the data, and holding our institutions accountable.
I completely agree. This case serves as a reminder that the pursuit of justice is an ongoing process. It requires constant attention and a willingness to confront difficult truths about our systems and ourselves.
Well, so we've got this stark contrast, right, between the majority opinion and Justice Stevens's dissent. And then we have these concurring opinions. Where do they fall on this spectrum?
Yeah, the concurring opinions are interesting because they agreed with the majority's decision to overturn the dismissal of the case, but they had different perspectives on Rule 16, which governs discovery in criminal cases. It's a good example of how, even when justices agree on the outcome of a case, they might have different views on the underlying legal principles.
So it wasn't just like a yes or no, even within the agreement. There were nuances and different interpretations at play.
Exactly. Some of the concurring justices expressed concern about what a broad interpretation of Rule 16 could mean. You know, they worried that it could lead to defendants making all these excessive and unnecessary discovery requests, potentially bogging down the legal process and making it harder for the justice system to function efficiently.
Right. So it sounds like they were trying to balance the need for fairness with the practical considerations of managing the workload of the courts, right? Like too many requests could just overwhelm the system.
That was their concern. They felt that requiring prosecutors to disclose all this extensive information about their decision-making process in every case could make it more difficult for them to effectively prosecute cases.
But wouldn't that also make it harder to hold prosecutors accountable for potential bias if they don't have to disclose as much information? It becomes more challenging to scrutinize their decisions.
Right. That's the tension that we keep coming back to in this case, finding that sweet spot between protecting prosecutorial discretion and ensuring fairness and transparency. It's a delicate balancing act.
So after considering all these different perspectives, where does that leave us? What are the key takeaways from United States v. Armstrong?
Well, United States v. Armstrong established a high bar for proving selective prosecution. It reaffirmed the broad discretion that's given to prosecutors, making it very difficult for defendants to successfully challenge charges based on claims of racial bias. They need that clear evidence of both discriminatory effect and discriminatory intent, which is a very high standard to meet.
It sounds like this case made it harder to address potential racial disparities in the justice system, even if those disparities are evident in the data.
That's one interpretation, but it's important to remember that the court didn't completely shut the door on these types of claims. They acknowledged the role of the courts in ensuring that prosecutorial discretion isn't being misused for unconstitutional purposes. So the possibility of challenging potential bias is still there, but the burden of proof remains incredibly high for defendants.
This deep dive has been a real eye-opener. United States v. Armstrong is clearly a landmark case that continues to shape discussions about fairness bias and accountability in our justice system.
It definitely highlights that ongoing tension between prosecutorial discretion and the pursuit of equal justice for all, regardless of their race. It also emphasizes the crucial role of the courts in navigating these complex issues and ensuring that our legal system lives up to its ideals.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into United States v. Armstrong, we want to leave you with some final questions to ponder. What would you have decided if you were on the jury for this case? Do you think the defendants met that high bar of clear evidence? What does this case tell us about the challenges of proving bias, even when it might be present? We encourage you to continue exploring this fascinating and important area of law. Thanks for joining us.